You're listening to The Philosopher's Note on an audience of one. More wisdom in less time.
Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to The Philosopher's Note on an audience of one, reclaiming creativity for its own sake, by Srinivas Rao. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. To sit down each day and work on bringing ideas into existence that might inspire someone, even if it's only yourself, and that require time, effort, energy, and engagement, that is at the heart of what it means to be creative. The work becomes our source of questions, answers, and meaning. It challenges us, causes us to grow, energizes, revitalizes, reveals, and heals. Creativity is our oxygen supply. We don't wait for inspiration to strike. We don't wait until we're in the mood. We are disciplined, focused, persistent, and courageous. And we trust that if we show up, our muse will too. It's not one piece of work, one moment in time, one burst of inspiration, but a daily practice and process that we are committed to for a lifetime. Hollywood might tempt us to believe that a creative life is made of chaos-fueled occasional bursts of inspiration, or what the writer Anne Lamott refers to as the fantasies of the uninitiated. But the reality of creative life is that it requires focus. Creativity is about showing up to make your art, whatever it might be, a habit. It's an ongoing commitment to the process. It might be easy to forget this when we're bombarded with other voices telling us to think about rewards. As you read this book, I hope you'll hear the sound of someone whom you've long forgotten, your creative voice, just itching to shout out loud and create the unmistakable, end quote. That is Srinivas Rao from An Audience of One. Now, Srinivas Rao has a super popular podcast called Unmistakable Creative, where he's interviewed over 500 creative people, ranging from Seth Godin and Tim Ferriss to Gretchen Rubin and Adam Grant. I got this book a few days ago from Penguin Random House. Thank you for another great book. Read it shortly thereafter, and here we are. It's a quick, fun look at the importance of doing work you are excited about and letting your disciplined commitment to the practice of your craft lead to the results. Focusing on that audience of one, it's the best way to the audience of millions. Now, I love the whole creative process. Check out Creativity 101 and a bunch of notes on great books in that wisdom pack, including several books Srinivas references like The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp and Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield. Now, you know how we talk about the importance of focusing on the process vis-a-vis the results? Well, this is a practical guide to making that happen. And as Adam Grant, see our notes on originals, puts it, quote, it is a practical guide for discovering or rediscovering your own creativity. Then we have Cal Newport, who is mentioned a number of times in the book and has his own little blurb on the back cover. Now, I thought of So Good They Can't Ignore You as I read the book, and here's what Cal says, quote, a crucial message for any creative professional looking to produce something great. It's packed with big ideas, and as always, I'm excited to share a few of my favorites and help us apply the wisdom to our lives today. So let's jump straight in. First big idea, the audience of one plus the creative process. Listen, quote, this book is not about the value of creativity, but rather about the creative process itself. How can we find the joy of creating for creativity's sake again in a world that pushes us to focus on the external goals we can't control? Even if you do create to support yourself and your family, the process can still be fulfilling and joyous. My goal is to equip you with the habits, routines, rituals, and systems I've applied so you too can live a vibrant, creative life unhindered by the modern pressure to monetize your art, end quote. Now that's from the introduction in which we learn about the fact that the book is divided into four sections. As a podcast host who has interviewed over 500 leading unmistakable creators, Srinivas has done a lot of listening. So it made sense for him to organize the book by the four main things we need to listen to as we strive to master the creative process of doing great work. Here's the super quick look. Number one, listening to creativity. This section is all about listening to the process of creativity itself, mastering the art and science of getting into flow to do the work on a consistent basis, etc. Then number two, listening to yourself. Then we need to listen to ourselves and what's really important to you. What is really important to you? Kind of begs that question, right? What are your values? Are you giving yourself time to figure all that out? And is your energy optimized to show up consistently at a high level? These things all matter. That's listening to yourself. Number three, listening to your environment. This is the longest section in the book by far. We need to structure our environments so we can win. Everything matters. Then number four, listening to others. We're always influenced by those around us. So let's pay attention to the people in our lives and do our best to optimize our relationships and influences. With that, on to some practical ideas. Next big idea. How do you feel about your work? Gift or chore? Quote, if you see your creative work as a chore, an obligation, or solely as an item to cross off your to-do list, the work will feel that way to you and anybody who interacts with it. On the other hand, if you see your work as a gift, a privilege, an opportunity to share the truth of what's in your heart with the world, that's the experience you'll have with it. Same work, different perspectives. End quote. Welcome to part one, listening to creativity. Pop quiz, how do you feel about your work? Does it feel like a chore? Or do you feel blessed to have the opportunity to do it? Of course, we're never going to reach a place where even the most ridiculously awesome work doesn't come with at least the occasional sense of chore-like drudgery, but the wisest among us will be able to step back and do that work within the context of a deeper meaning, as we see our work as a gift and a privilege, a calling, to use Seligman's language. Now, Michelle Seeger talks about the same basic idea in the context of motivational psychology as applied to health behaviors. As we discuss in No Sweat, we can approach our eating, moving, and sleeping as a pain in the butt, gotta do a chore, or we can approach it as a sweet, let's see just how optimized I can get, this is fun, gift. Guess who tends to sustain healthy behaviors just a tad more and enjoy the process just a tad more? Yeah, the gift givers. Think about that the next time you eat well and train and go to bed early. You're like Santa Claus, giving yourself gifts, if that's your thing. Which begs the question, how are you approaching your eating, moving, and sleeping? Which we'll be talking about more in a moment. And how are you approaching your creative work? And note, it's all creative work. Whether you're an HR executive or a mom or an entrepreneur or a strength and conditioning coach, we're all artists of our crafts and of our lives. So let's take the time to see our work as a gift rather than as a chore. P.S. Srinivas also talks about Carol Dweck and the fact that the people with the growth mindset who love what they do and focus on the process of getting better get way better and experience way more of the results while enjoying themselves a lot more than the fixed mindset people who tend to get burned out when their outcome goals, all of which are outside of their control, don't match up with their expectations. So focus on why you love what you do, create for an audience of one, let the millions follow. Next big idea. An immersion in unparalleled joy. Quote, an ongoing commitment to our creativity, a daily practice, regardless of what form it takes, enables us to experience progress. When we experience progress, we gain creative momentum and productivity. As a result, we can reach a state called flow or deep work more readily, which increases our happiness. Our brains are wired to crave this state of flow. It's when there's no place you'd rather be and nothing else you'd rather be doing. It's the feeling I get when I catch a perfect wave, he says, and the world around me disappears. Flow is a state in which we are singularly focused on the task at hand. Our senses heighten and we lose track of time. the activity itself becomes the reward. Flow puts us into a state of unparalleled joy. The process becomes so intrinsically rewarding that we're able to easily detach from the outcome. Flow not only makes time fly by, but leads to disproportionate increases in creative output. What usually might take 2 hours takes 30 minutes when we are in flow. I've seen this pattern over and over in my life as a writer. This kind of deep immersion creates a rhythm and momentum that feels so good that the creative process becomes addictive. End quote. Flow, deep work, this is the essence of both creative joy and creative output. Of course, we talk about them all the time via wisdom from Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi and Cal Newport and others. I also love the way Stephen Kotler talks about flow. In fact, it's the wind beneath Superman's wings in his great book, The Rise of Superman. Here's how he puts it, quote, "When doing what we most love transforms us into the best possible version of ourselves, and that version hints at even greater future possibilities, the urge to explore those possibilities becomes feverish compulsion. Intrinsic motivation goes through the roof. Thus, flow becomes an alternative path to mastery, sans the misery. Forget 10,000 hours of delayed gratification. Flow junkies turn instant gratification into their North Star, putting in far more hours of practice time by gleefully harnessing their hedonic impulse." That is a genius passage. Check out the notes for more on the context there. So, when doing what we love to do is the thing that helps us become the best version of ourselves, yeah, that's the ticket. Being able to drop into that flow state on a consistent, rhythmic basis is essentially what the book is all about. One of the keys, doing what we love, focusing on that audience of one. How about a quick look at what can get in the way? Next big idea, cognitive athlete who smokes. Quote, "This addiction does far more than decrease our productivity and reduce the likelihood of creative breakthroughs. It does long-term damage to our ability to focus and be present. It turns us into what Cal Newport refers to as the cognitive equivalent of being an athlete who smokes. Our harmless checks while waiting in line at the grocery store or boarding a flight are not as harmless as we might imagine. If we're constantly giving in to digital distractions, mindlessly shifting our attention from app to app and website to website, this creates what is known as an attention residue, which reduces cognitive performance for a non-trivial amount of time to follow. What we do before we do creative work has just as much of an impact as how we work. When we've spent hours letting our attention drift from one external stimulus to another, we'll have a much more challenging time managing our attention when we want to work. This is why we must be able to resist our temptation to give in to the distractions, even when we are not doing creative work." End quote. That is from the third and longest section called Listen to Your Environment. Now, obviously, if you're trying to do deep, important work, then having your phone on and web browsers open so you're receiving a bunch of push notifications and email alerts and a constant barrage of external distractions makes no sense, right? For the moment, let's assume you've prioritized deep work and creative time in your masterpiece days, hopefully before you've had your mind blown up with other people's thoughts, etc. Now, what's a little more subtle is the impact of all those other times you allow yourself to indulge in the barrage of inputs. Maybe it's one more swipe to unlock your phone and check the newest notification, or that email check that leads to Facebook, that leads to news, that leads to whatever it is you do on your loop. What is it you do again? Now, obviously, when we waste time constantly checking inputs, our productivity is going to go down, because of the sheer amount of time spent doing shallow work when we could be doing deep work, which, when you add it up, adds up. The harder to spot cost is the long-term damage to our ability to focus and be present, which leads us to Cal Newport's fantastic line that doing that all day every day is the cognitive equivalent of being an athlete who smokes. Think about it. If you were trying to become a world-class athlete, would you smoke? All right. Well, now you may not have the ambition to become a world-class creator, but if you do, you A, wouldn't smoke, and B, wouldn't do the cognitive equivalent of smoking by constantly, or even occasionally, paper-cutting your attention with compulsive consumption of inputs. Right? So, do you have a cognitive smoking problem? Let's kick the habit. Next big idea. Listen to your body. Quote, part of listening to yourself means listening to your body. It's hard to be at your best creatively when you're not at your best physically. Creative habits require energy. Energy comes from the proper self-care in the form of sleep, nutrition, and exercise. Without adequate amounts of all three, you are at a self-imposed handicap, and you can't sustain peak creativity. End quote. Now, you want to create powerfully? Let's make sure your energy is optimized. It's great to see a book on creativity focus on this obvious but essential and often overlooked step. Srinivas walks us through our big three fundamentals: eat, move, sleep. Although his order is sleep, eat, move, given its extraordinary importance to creativity and given the depression he battled that he attributes to horrible sleep habits. I love this. He says, quote, so perhaps the most underrated creative hack is sleep. So let's get right to the practical point on this one. How's your energy? What's the number one thing you know you could be doing to optimize it? And most importantly, what specifically can you make that, will you start doing today? Well, what is it for you? Let's give ourselves the best possible shot to actualize our potential. And remember, quote, it's hard to be at your best creatively when you're not at your best physically. All of which leads us to our next big idea, second to last one, monotasking versus multitasking / task switching. Quote, given that flow follows focus, a singular focus in all of our daily activities makes it easier to experience flow when we do creative work. In the process, the ability to maintain singular focus becomes a habit. So, in addition to creative activities, aim for singular focus in all your daily activities, even checking email, browsing the web, uploading pictures, or updating your status. When you multitask, you shorten your attention span and decrease your productivity. You also inhibit your ability to return to flow when you're done with these activities. Try to monotask to improve your focus and attention. Make a to-do list of all the things you'd like to get done today, including high-value creative work like writing, painting, or taking photos on your list. Also include updating your status on Facebook, responding to emails, and uploading pictures to Instagram. You'll find you're able to get everything on your list done faster when you're working on only one at a time. He continues by saying, I've noticed this pattern over and over in my own work. If I am editing an episode of my podcast and I try to check email, check Facebook, check Twitter, and then edit the podcast, it takes up to 90 minutes. If I focus on nothing other than editing the podcast, I can have it edited, uploaded, and ready to publish in about 30 minutes, end quote. Now that's from the section on making sure our environments support our creative process. Of course, if we've created an environment in which we allow for endless distraction, we're going to have a tough time doing great work. Remember, flow follows focus. Trying to do a bunch of things, quote, at once, knocks us out of the feel-good while getting a ton done state of flow while destroying the efficiency with which we get those things done. Now, I pulled this idea out because it so perfectly parallels the little task switching analysis we covered in our note on Alex Pang's The Distraction Addiction. Recall the little experiment from that book. Pang tells us that it takes about 1.5 seconds for most people to count from 1 to 10. And it takes about 1.5 seconds to say the alphabet from A to J. Two very simple tasks we've done countless times. Super easy, super efficient. But if you switch back and forth between those two tasks, A1, B2, etc., how long will it take? Now, if we're all as good at task switching as we think, it should take 3 seconds. 1.5 seconds for A to J, plus 1.5 seconds for 1 to 10 for the non-math majors out there. But what you'll find if you do the experiment, and I highly recommend you do, is that it takes at least 10 seconds to do it. In other words, at least 3 times longer than if you did them separately. Again, I highly recommend you take a minute to do this little experiment so you have a visceral feeling of the power of this idea. Now, what's funny is that this is precisely how much longer Srinivas tells us it takes him to do his little podcast editing, right? Going from 30 minutes to 90 minutes. Moral of the story? Let's monotask today. Next and final big idea, high five, your ikigai. Quote, in Japan, there's a term known as ikigai, which means a reason to get up in the morning. People of Okinawa are believed to be the longest lived people in the world because they have ikigai. When we live a creative life every day over the course of a lifetime, it gives us not only a reason to get up in the morning, but something to look forward to. By designing just one small part of our day, we become deliberate creators of our life experience. When we make art every day and listen to our creativity, we have a reason to get up in the morning. We have ikigai. So make art every day. Make it through good times and bad times. Make it when you're consumed by grief and overwhelmed with joy. Make it because the process brings you joy. He says, creative work is a daily journey. It's filled with false starts, detours, dead ends, missed connections, and false horizons. It leads you down unexpected roads and to unimagined destinations. It will challenge, inspire, and provoke you. It will push you to your limits and enable you to exceed those limits. Creative work changes its creator as much as, if not more than, the audience it collides with. To listen to creativity is to take this journey. Seek out this change and evolve into the next best version of ourselves. End quote. Ikigai, he's one of the stars of Purpose 101, little plus one I linked to in the note, in our notes on Neil Pasricha's The Happiness Equation, where he tells us, quote, nobody knows what they're going to do with their entire life. Nobody. Having one giant purpose that you strive toward forever isn't the goal. What is? An ikigai. A current aim, a reason to get out of bed in the morning. So, what's your ikigai? Why are you fired up to get out of bed tomorrow morning? Let's hold that gift, remember it's not a chore, in our minds and hearts as we enjoy the creative process of the ultimate creative project, making our lives a masterpiece. That is a quick look at this great quick reading little book. If you enjoyed this, I think you'll enjoy the book. And I also think you'll enjoy our Creativity Wisdom Pack. Check that out on the app, on the site, Wisdom Packs Creativity. We've got the 101 class, a ton of notes, and a bunch of plus ones as well. For now, let's enjoy some great quotes and we'll wrap it up. These are all from Srinivas Rao. He tells us, the ultimate paradox of creative work is that what you create for an audience of one is much more likely to reach an audience of millions. Listening to yourself is about hearing your unmistakable voice. You will never develop an authentic voice unless you are fully aware of what makes you unique and pursue it boldly, says accidental creative founder Todd Henry. Check out our notes on Todd's great books that you will find, those you will find in the Wisdom Pack on creativity. Srinivas tells us, in the simplest terms, our values are determined by whatever it is that we choose to make the highest priority in our lives and why we choose to do something. Moral of that quote, know your values, live in integrity with them. Next idea or little quote here, the myth of making it causes many aspiring creatives to believe that there will be a day when they no longer have to do the work that has gotten them to where they are. Those who buy into this myth and rest on their laurels become victims of their own success. They don't stand the test of time. Here's a quote from Stuart Wilde. I loved this quote so much, I Googled the source for it, found it, Infinite Self, immediately bought it, immediately started reading it, note coming soon. Stuart Wilde tells us this, quote, messy surroundings and an untidy life reflect a weakened metaphysical and psychological state. If you are powerful, you will dominate your life. You will find time to clean up and order things. And you will want to do that as a part of your personal discipline. Mess is the external manifestation of the ego's disquiet and laziness. That's some strong stuff. Back to Srinivas, who tells us, treat the information you consume like the food you put into your body. If you are on a perpetual junk food binge, you're not going to feel very good. The same goes for your digital consumption habits. Enter Conquering Digital Addiction 101 and Andy Warhol, who tells us, don't think about making art, just get it done. Let everyone else decide if it's good or bad, whether they love it or hate it. While they are deciding, make even more art. How about Michael Jordan? He says, my greatest skill was being teachable. I was like a sponge. Even if I thought my coaches were wrong, I tried to listen and learn something. That was in the context of Jordan's biography, Jordan the Life. I went out and got that as well. Note on that coming soon. All of which leads us back to Srinivas, who tells us, when you take your final breath, what will you leave behind? Will there be anything for people to remember you by? Projects, art, and connections that tell your story? Will the world be more interesting for your having been here? Or will there simply be a generic obituary somewhere on the internet? That's a sobering way to end. Let's go back to high-fiving our icky guy. What is your reason for getting up tomorrow morning? Get clear on it. Live in integrity with it. Eliminate the distractions, the stuff that's getting in the way from you expressing the optimist, the best version of you, as you get just a little bit better today, tomorrow, the day after that, aggregating, compounding those tiny little incremental optimizations over an extended period of time. Enter magic, you at your best. Can't wait to see what that looks like. For now, make today another awesome day. Appreciate you and your support. See ya.
We hope you enjoyed this Philosopher's Note. Please go to optimize.me to download more.